So welcome everyone, thank you for coming tonight. For those of you here last week, when I was here too, you remember we looked at Thich Nhat Hanh's calligraphy on smile, one word, smile, people remember? And we talked about that as, well, we said lots of different things, but one of the things we said was it's a mudra, it's sort of like a symbolic gesture that acknowledges each of us has the capacity, no matter what's going on in the world, no matter what the drama, whether it's a good drama, a bad drama, a happy drama, a sad drama, et cetera, et cetera. Each of us have that capacity in the moment to generate calmness and peace and loving kindness. And that is symbolized in the capacity to have a half smile on our lips, and that it's something worth generating. You know, many people have a different practice in this life. It's called the half frown. Actually, I was talking to somebody this week and that struck me. Many people practice the half frown. They're always kind of ruminating on something. Something's not right, right? We got a little half frown. Things aren't going our way, somebody's not meeting our needs, day's not going the way we want it to go, so we have a little bit of a frown on our face, the half frown. It's a different mudra. But we want to practice the half smile. And again, it's not just a stupid grin, it's that proverbial eating grin. But it's coming out of us, this capacity that we all have in the moment to generate a peaceful mind. So I'm just wondering, did anybody practice the half smile? Jacqueline did. What did you do? How did you practice it?
I guess just in different ways of when there would be something that I would think was puzzling or odd or distressing, I would just say, you know, I would just use it as a, like, sort of a musing opportunity. You know, rather than putting a judgment or a explanation or whatever, it was kind of a way for me to say, oh, that's just how it is.
And a lot of times it is kind of funny how things are, how people are, what they do, what they don't do, the way they react. It's kind of silly, a lot of silliness in this life. So we can smile at that. A lot of self-importance, taking the daily dramas being so important. And, you know, ourself is so important. You know, a lot of that. Anybody else play around with the half smile this week? What did you do, Dave?
Well, I tried to move it further. Last week I talked about when I was out running, I would try to smile and say hello to people. Susan, I do that, right? You see, yeah. Anyway. But I also go to Gold's Gym. And I try to be more conscious when I'm there of not just walking around with a frown on my face, but at least a more peaceful look on my face. And people that I've met before just smile. Do it that way.
Good. So Dave has been taking it off the street into the gym. Exercising his half smile in sort of a workout situation.
Right.
And finds that
no one walked up and smacked me.
Nobody. That's a good sign. you didn't provoke any aggressiveness.
No.
But when you put that half smile on your face, how did it feel to you at that moment? How do you feel
well,
in that moment?
I think that main thing, particularly when I'm going into a new situation, I'm just more conscious of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
More aware during that time.
Mm-hmm. But have you tried to kind of have a bad mood and smile at the same time?
That's pressing.
It's difficult. It's difficult. I mean, there is something about that facial expression which can trigger off within one's own body-mind a different kind of mind state that may be worth cultivating. I mean, because it is actually, when one does smile, one's face does relax. You know, when one smiles, there's a relaxation in the facial muscles. As opposed to the half frown, or the full frown, which takes more work. Good. So before we return to these pith teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh, we always begin, if anybody's new tonight, with an opportunity for anybody to ask any questions about the meditation practices we do and about the application, because, you know, we do practice in the tradition of engaged Buddhism, which means it's a Buddhism that's engaged in daily life, all the situations of daily life, the things that we deal with. And so if anybody has any questions about how to apply it specifically in areas of one's life, please feel free to ask any question you like at this point. Don't be shy, as we say. So, and this was attributed to me?
Yes.
Oh, this, okay. So, the question is, Bill was saying, in talking to his involving intensive to his mentor, I guess you were talking about anger, and he said that I had once said that anger does have a place, or anger can be appropriate sometimes.
Correct.
Right, and Bill saying, I thought usually when one reads about Buddhism and anger, it's like if there's one thing you want to stay away from, it is the emotion of anger. I think that's good question, because of the afflictive emotions, anger does have a special place within the Buddhist hierarchy of afflictive emotions, primarily because it has the capacity of doing the most harm. I mean, the other emotions often are ones that, excessive worry or anxiety or sadness, despair, you know, these kinds of things, jealousy. I mean, they're often things that are very disturbing to us, right, the experience, but don't have great capacity to doing danger or creating harm for others. But we know anger has a great capacity for not only disturbing one's own equilibrium and harmony of mind, but when it is expressed, either verbally or potentially physically, it has a great capacity of hurting, of doing harm. And we know anger expressed, can go beyond just individuals. We have, we see in the world the way people, when they are angry at one another, what's going on in Syria right now and other parts of the world, we see people have the great capacity to do great violence, and all stemming from their anger at this person. So anger is usually something that practitioners are told, do whatever you can, right, to sublimate, to calm, to let go of your anger. And that, I would say, is a good precaution. But at the same time, I think, and now I'm talking about not the expression of anger, but the feeling of anger, which is a little different. And I think it's important that we acknowledge, and this is, I think, one of the problems with those of us who suffer from runaway emotions, is that they that we often do not differentiate between the feeling, experience of an emotion, and then what we do with it. Right? To be aware that there is anger within me is not the same as saying that I have to go hit somebody, or I have to go tell somebody what I think of them, or I have to, you know, do to them what I think they've done to me. So in that sense, self-awareness and mindfulness, which reveals to us that there is anger, is different from the expression, the aggressive, hurting expression, the confused expression of anger. Okay, so that's important to differentiate. Now, how can anger somehow to have a positive function? We can get angry for all kinds of reasons, right? And a lot of them are just totally off base. Off base meaning they're just our egocentricity, you know, we're just, people aren't doing what we want, or, you know, things aren't going our way, and we're just pissed. You know, we're frustrated, we're irritated, we're angry, we're enraged. And a lot of times that's just pure, outright selfish egocentricity, you know, our own only thinking of ourselves. But lots of times, to be angry at something can reveal a truth, let's say, about injustice. Right? To be angry at intolerance. To be angry at injustice. To have an anger when you see people mistreating somebody else, or lying, or doing, you know what I mean, doing things that are grossly harmful, right? Sort of anger in a certain way is a kind of human response. That's kind of an alert that says what? Something's not right here. Right? Something's not right here. If people could learn to stop there, that would be fine. Because the key for me is not that you never have anger, but that you don't act from anger, which is very different, right? We can be angry about something, but we need to stop and hold it in our mindfulness to see if it's just my projection, my creation, my egocentricity, my need to control, manipulate, you know, have everything go my way, etc., or whether there really is a problem here, right? You know, there may be a problem. There may be a problem in relationships. You know, people go off and get in a little anger, irritation come up in relationships. Relationships of peers, partners, friends, parent, child, child, parent. You know, I mean, there are work, you know, where there are conflicts and anger, you know, arises. Again, at that level, to use that as just a kind of a feedback kind of thing that just alerts one, and then to look deeply into it before acting, you know, again, there may be a problem that needs to be dealt with, that needs to be communicated. There's something I need to communicate somebody, or something that I need to look into. So at that stage, that's what I would say. I would say anger may serve a useful function. I think the key point always is don't act from anger. That's where it gets problematic, right? Because when the anger is still alive in us, right, if we are still in the anger, and off, you know, when we're angry, have you noticed? it's not a very calm, clear place. Has anybody noticed that? You know, it's not often a very wise place. And it's usually not a place that is willing to take into the view of another. Usually when we're angry, we're what? We're right, they're wrong. We're good, they're bad. Right? I mean, anybody ever experienced that? And obviously, when you act from that, you can only act what? in your own interests, which again are often because of your anger are very skewed in that moment. But you really cannot see at least the other's viewpoint, right? And try to understand why they may be doing what they're doing or not doing what they're doing. So when we act, we can act from a place that has some intelligence, some understanding, some compassion, you know. I mean, the other thing is when we're angry, anybody find that they can be very angry and compassionate at the same time? Very difficult. I'd have to be a highly advanced practitioner to be enraged and yet be compassionate, right? So, because oftentimes when people do things that cause us to be angry or irritated at them, they are suffering, right? And it's often good to stop and see their suffering and acknowledge their suffering, because it may inform how we respond. Right? So in that sense, I think to be able to develop enough self-awareness and mindfulness that one can be aware when anger, irritation, frustration is arisen in one, identify it for what it is, look deeply into it to see whether it has any validity or it's just, one of those. And then to separate, to create some space, you know, you don't have to act right away, do you? You know, a lot of times we think we do, but we don't, and it's better to what? To give some space, take a little time, right? Until we know that we are clear in terms of our understanding of the situation, that our anger has calmed down enough that if we do communicate to someone else, we can communicate in an open way. Because when we communicate from anger, from hurt, it's not going to be good, is it? You all know that, don't you? From experience, it's not good. So again, learning to exercise strategic self-control, right, is probably good. And then the last thing I would say is, and this is really important, that one be free of egocentricity, but sometimes to manifest some anger may be necessary, may be compassionate action, right? You know, some people don't get it. Right? And you can be nice and sweet and kind and communicative, right? And do all that good stuff. And many people will get it, but some people don't get it. Right? Some people, they need a 2x4. And again, if you need to use the 2x4, I'm talking about now the not the symbolic 2x4. But sometimes you got to hit people with a 2x4 because they cannot stop on their own, right? And sometimes you have to manifest. In Dharma, we call that the wrathful. Sometimes you have to manifest a little wrathful energy to let them know, hey, this has got to stop. You know, this is wrong. Right? Now, if you can do it somewhat like an actor, you know, where your manifestation of, you know, like sometimes children, right? You just got to kind of, if you're a parent, you just got to kind of show them that little wrathful side. You know, sometimes it can just be a look, you know, where you let them know, this is it. You know, and behind these eyes, there is a wrathful being, you know, who's telling you to stop it. Right? And sometimes, again, you know, that's helpful for the child because they're not responding, right? And sometimes people just cross the line, you know, and just talking to them doesn't bring them back. So you got to kind of let them know, no, you got to stop, right? We could certainly say in a political realm, civil disobedience and those kinds of things are sort of like that, right? They can be very forceful, and yet the anger is not, there's no violence and there's no hatred expressed. But with that, we have to be a little more careful. You know, you have to make sure that you're really not inflamed with anger. You know, both Gandhi and, you know, people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King, you know, who were leaders of social movements that were very, we could say, assertive, just shy of aggressive in putting forth their platform and their needs and their, you know, what did they want to happen. But both of them were very profoundly spiritual men, right? Who really were very clear that you could be very confrontive, and yet you were never to hate. You actually were to what? To love. Which again sounds not easy, right? But again, I think they're both coming from the same place that I'm talking about, right? Which is, again, sometimes people in power don't just listen to the quiet, reasonable voice, do they? Right? So sometimes people have to take more stronger kinds of ways to get the attention. Again, it can be a tactic rather than expression of hatred. Because again, you know, at the end of the day, we do have to live together. Right? And just like if you're in a relationship with somebody and you live with them, you know, if you unload your anger aggressively, verbally, physically, that may feel good in the moment. You know, you got it off your chest, right? But if you've hurt that person, or you've just fed their seeds of anger, right? The thing is, you're still living with them. So you're going to reap something, you know, that you'll live to regret, because it's sort of like... what's that expression? You win the battle, but you lose the war. Right? And I think that's a very meaningful expression in families and relationships. You know, the bigger picture is what? You know, you want harmony and goodness in your relationship. So, you know, to win a battle... You may win a battle with your significant other, with your child, with your whatever, but if it creates such suffering, right, that it affects the whole, it's probably not worth it, is it? In the same way, you know, in this world, you see countries where different political groups. But different ideologies, different ethnic groups, different religious groups, they are so stridently hateful and aggressive to one another, right? That even after one or the other, you know, after it's been settled, or one or the after has won, there's still such a residue of hatred that it'll just come out again, right? In the society. Because people don't see the bigger picture. Know that we're all in this together, and that we have to figure out a way, just like in families, just like in couples, just like in societies in the world, that even though there are different ways of viewing things and seeing things and understanding things in all ways, at the end of the day, we have to live with one another. So if we can learn to do that as individuals in the context of our family and relationships, then we have something that we can bring to the world, because we know how to do that. But if we can't even create peace and harmony in our own families, in our own relationships, what hope is there for the world, right? It's hopeless, right? If two people or three people or four people or seven people or 10 people or 12 people who mean well, can't live in peace and harmony with one another, right? How can you expect, you know, ordinary people who don't even have that inclination or have those skills or capacities that we have or that desire to live that way, right? So that is why, again, in the in this tradition, statements such as, you know, peace begins with me, or, you know, every step a peaceful step, and things like that have meaning. Because it's saying, if I cannot first create peace within myself and learn to act in a peaceful way with my fellow beings, right, and to walk peacefully on the earth, and right? I mean, how can, you know, how can we ever expect the world to become a peaceful place? Because the world is made up of what? People. You know, our community is made up of people. Our country is made up of people. Our state is made up of people. Our world is made, you know, it's all people, right? Our government, you know, we can go about the systems and the government, but at the end of the day, it's what? People. People who are this and people who are that. People who are happy and people who are unhappy. People who are selfish and people who are selfless. People, right? People who are greedy and people who are generous. They're all human beings. And all they're doing is acting out from their own mental formations. Right? So that's why it's so important that we do our own, take our own transformation very seriously. And see that as really contributing to the transformation of our community, of our society, of the world. We are one. Well, that was a long answer to a short question. Thank you. Any other questions about practice? Yes.
How does one...
What is your name again?
Scott.
Scott, yes, Scott.
How does one walk that line trying to ease someone else's suffering and yet not be, to use a euphemism, a doormat? If you know what I mean.
Yeah, so Scott asks a good question. He says, well, if you're, you know, how do you walk that line between easing somebody's suffering and being a doormat? Well, I would ask you, Scott, in the situations that you're thinking about, does being a doormat alleviate that person's suffering?
From their perspective, perhaps.
But I'm saying from your perspective. I'm not saying in the interaction.
It doesn't.
But overall. Because suffering...
It doesn't help them.
Yeah, it doesn't help them. And that's, again, that's, it sort of ties in with Bill's question. You know... again, when we manifest our wrathful energy, it's because we want to help somebody. And we realize that our nice, kind, sweet way doesn't help them. And that's why we have to take out the 2x4. Not because we want to bash them over the head, but because we want to help them, and we only know that, you know, some people just need that to get the message, right? So in the same way, all your actions, you know, have a simple, right? One, you know, is this, you know, in Buddhism we say ahimsa, do no harm. We want all our actions to not create harm. And at the same time, we want all our actions to actually reduce suffering, right? And not just in a Band-Aid approach, right? So If you're talking about somebody who's an alcoholic, right, and they say to you, "I'm all out of booze and I don't have any money. Please, Scott, and I'm suffering. Could you please alleviate my suffering and go down and get me a fifth of gin?" Right? What would Scott do?
Wouldn't.
He wouldn't, because why? I mean, the person's suffering, and if you went and did it, they'd be happy, wouldn't they? Yeah, for now. So you're looking more deeply, aren't you? Right. You're understanding not just the immediacy of this person's suffering, but you're looking more deeply. Okay? And therefore your action, which the person may think is what? Cruel. Right? I mean, that person who's suffering and says, "Get me a drink," By you saying no to them is what you're probably, from their point of view, they might say you go to meditation and you read all these spiritual books and look at you, what a complete selfish jerk you are, right? You're cruel. They might say that to you, might they? Right? You, Mr. Compassion. Look. So you have to be clear. Right? You have to be clear. And again, the clarity you want is, I really want to help this person. Right? And I know this is not going to help them, but actually it's going to harm them. Is that clear? So, being a doormat is never the answer. Sometimes it's better not to say anything. Right? Sometimes it's better not to act. But again, not because you're scared to. You see what I'm saying? But because in the situation, you know it's probably the most skillful thing to do. Did that make clear? It's important, again. That's why in this practice, the less self there is, which means the less Scott there is in the interaction, and the more you're able to be present to the other person to see them clearly, the more able you're able to act for their benefit. Right? The more Scott there is, more you're involved in Scott and his issues and his stuff, and you know what I'm saying? The more you're acting for, or not acting from Scott. Right? And again, it's an important piece. How do you get less Scott and more clarity and more of the other? By practice. The more you can practice. The more you have that clarity, the more you can be very self-aware and know when your stuff is arising and let it go, the more you're able to really be present to the other and really see what's going on, the more you look deeply into their situation, not only to see their present suffering, but to see the deeper causes of their suffering, that hopefully you can act, as intelligently and wisely and skillfully as you can. But Scott, even with all that, you may not have the magic cure. Right? It's important to know that too. So we just do our best at the end. That's all we can do. We do our best, and we're not scared of coming back a second, third time. You know what I mean? Many people feel, I got to get it right. But how do you know if it's right? Until you see what happens. Right? So, hopefully you're coming from the best place you can in terms of responding to this other person or not responding. You act or you don't act. And then something happens, right? And then, if you're willing to stay present, it just starts over again. And once again you're present. And once again you see what's going on. And once again you... So it's a process. Is that clear? And you just have to be willing to stay involved in the process of life. So does that speak to... is there anything else in that, or is that it? Okay. Any other questions about practice and daily life? I'm sure somebody has some question.
Well, since I don't think we're going to get to the other teaching this evening, a follow-up on anger. Did you say the same rules that you've talked about here or same practices apply when you get angry at yourself?
So the question being asked is, continuing on the issue of anger, how about anger at yourself? Yes. I mean, if you're an angry person, I'm not saying you are, but if one's an angry person, obviously, if you can stop, putting it out to everybody else and just put it on yourself is probably a good first step. At least, rather than harming lots of people, you're only harming yourself. And then you can kind of look at that. You know, it's funny. There is, I mean, there's discussion in this Sangha, right, about the five mindfulness trainings, right? And you know, one of the training precepts is about communication, right? And you know, how to talk and use words to be constructive, right? And rather than words that can be destructive, right? Words that are supportive and kind, as opposed to words that are cruel and cut down. So we know that in relationship, how one communicates is probably the key thing, often for the quality of the relationship. Right? Okay. What people often miss, and I think this is important, is to realize that each of us are often carrying on ongoing dialogues with ourselves. Does anybody notice that? That there is an ongoing conversation. And we won't get into the truth or falsity of these various selves we posit, but still there is a communication, right? Where we talk to ourselves, and we judge ourselves, and we write in all this. And again, I would say yes. That precept, that training, I'm learning to have wise, compassionate, helpful dialogues, includes our communication with ourselves. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was a therapist and people who had issues with self-hate and self-loathing or just had a lot of, you know, and they would tell me the things they said to themselves. And I'd go, what? I mean, you know, do you talk that way to other people? And they said, would say, no, I would never talk that way to anybody else. And I'm kind of leading them along. I mean, so I'd say, why wouldn't you talk? I mean, do you talk that way to your children? Do you talk that way to your wife, your husband? You know, they say vile things to each other. You know, every other word is you idiot, you fool. I said, you know, do you talk that way? And they said, no. And I would say to them, well, why don't you say those things to your children? And they'd say, oh, well, because I love them. And I would never want to do anything to harm them. And then I'd kind of, it's kind of like an act, but I'd say, let me get this straight. You would never talk to anybody you love in the way you talk to yourself because it is harmful. And yet you talk to yourself that way? I mean, that's sick, isn't it? Right? I mean, when we talk to ourselves and use those kinds of words that we know create harm, right? How could it not create harm to ourselves to be talked to that way? You know? I mean, how would you like to be followed around by somebody all day? You know, just kind of walks about 3 feet behind you, and every time you make a mistake, calls you, you idiot. You jerk. I can't believe you. I mean, at what point would you turn around and tell that person, you know, get lost? Right? You would, wouldn't you? I mean, would you want somebody like that around you all the time? No. Right? And yet, internally, people carry on those kind of dialogues for years. Yeah, it's not healthy. It's not right speech. And our internal conversation should be just like our external conversation, right? It should be caring, kind, helpful, supportive, right? Compassionate, understanding, right? And we should never say anything to ourselves that we wouldn't say to anybody else because, right? I mean, if I said to you, Dave, do you talk that way with your grandchildren? And Dave would say what? He smiles, right? It's you don't have to think about it, right? You just don't do it. And if I said to you, Dave, if you thought about it, why don't you speak that way to your grandchildren? And you'd say, because,
love them, but you wouldn't want to hurt them.
Right. And yet, do I need to complete the sentence? Yeah. So we need to step back. I mean, again, and I say that to you only because for so many people, that kind of internal dialogue has gone on for so long, for so many years, you don't even know that it's abnormal. You know, you think it's just normal. Right? You know, has anybody ever been like in Publix or Walmart or something, and all of a sudden you hear some parent open up on some little kid, and you just cringe. Right? The way they talk to this little child, right? And you realize the only reason they're doing it in public is because they think it's normal. Right? I mean, and so you realize this poor mother or father, you know, it's probably the way they were talked to as children. You know, they don't, you know, we cringe. But they think it's normal, right? Because they just, because it's probably been their experience. So again, many people, because of what, you know, causes and conditions, have these types of highly critical, judgmental, you know, some people even almost hateful internal dialogues with themselves. Should all be stopped. You should never call yourself names. Even like, you know, idiot or stupid, or, you know, dumb. I mean, do you talk to your grandchildren? You know, that's stupid. Do you talk that way to them? No. Right? Even if they were being stupid, as I'm sure they are, right? You would find a way to say it, right, that was constructive.
Willful and stubborn.
Willful and stubborn, which is better. At least that's pointing to the characteristic rather than, you know, using a name, which tears down. Yeah, we you want to be very attentive to your dialogue, yeah, the way you speak to others and the way we speak to ourselves, and make it a unity. You know what I mean? No, you know, nice guy outside, but when it comes to himself, he's a bad guy. You want to be a nice guy to Dave. He's a good guy, right? Doesn't he deserve love and understanding and support? Yeah, especially from you. I mean, you've known him longer than anybody in his life. I mean, you've been with him since day one. And if you don't think much of him, I mean, it must not feel good, right? I mean, he really would like support from you. Is that clear? So just stop it. Or at least every time, if you still do it, I mean, I'd say stop it, but every time you can't stop it and you find yourself saying something to him that way, immediately apologize.
That's helpful.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dave. That wasn't a nice way to talk to you. Forgive me. Yeah, I'd say that to him. Anything else before we end? So the practice this week is what? Well, deal with anger in the way we talked. Be attentive to anger in the way we talked. Learning to hold your anger in self-awareness and mindfulness and really separate anger and irritation from acting, and to really look deeply into the sources of your anger, and do your best with other people to come from a place where you're really wanting the best for them, not in terms of your agenda, but in terms of what you think would be most beneficial for who they are. In other words, the more the self is not present, the better it is to act for the benefit of others. And finally, for those of you who have those kinds of internal dialogues that are self-critical and negative and hateful, stop. And if after stopping, you make a mistake and continue, please apologize to yourself and say you will do better in the future. Okay? So we'll end here.